Hi.
How you doing?
Well, yourself? How are things back at the office?
It wasn't a bad day. Better to be home.
Oh, yeah. Are you at your away home or your Sellersville home?
I'm home. I decided to make the trip.
Nice. The roads were okay.
They were okay. People were going mighty slow. I found out that I can actually get my new car to like cut loose on the back. I have fun doing that. Like, let's see what it'll do. Goose it, turn the wheel, make sure there's lots of room, and see if I can get the back to let loose. I never could get that to happen in my other car. It was just too big and heavy.
So does that mean you can turn off the or all-wheel or four-wheel drive?
No, it cut loose with it on, I think. You can't turn it off.
Oh, okay.
That's one of the things I do. Growing up in Michigan, it's like, okay, let's try to do donuts. Let's see what this car will do when you have space and the inclination just to see how it handles.
Yep. A bunch of bubbas driving around on lakes.
I've never driven on a lake, but oh, I was listening to Paul Hatterman at the gym today. That was good.
Oh, what's new with Paul's teachings, if anything?
Think of what he was talking about. I liked what he was saying. It was just he didn't use the word selfing, but he was saying, you just kind of stop believing that you are these thoughts, these emotions, these sort of arbitrary winds that blow through. And as you stop believing that you're it, things change. And he actually. You'd swear he was making a promise that things get better. Like as you start to realize you're not that, you get happier. I think he was kind of talking about waking up from the dream. He actually referenced the Course in Miracles, I think.
Yes, he'll do that. He'll reference the course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I get from what you say a lot is just, don't count on it getting better. This is not a get happy quick. That's not what it's about, really.
Well, experiencing is very fond of placing itself front and center, right? The fact of experiencing has a tendency, let's say, for we humans to anthropomorphize its own presence. And so space and time and past and future and the miraculous quality of moment-to-moment texture gets right converted into an I, me, myself. And this I, me, myself occupies the convenient or inconvenient imagination of time. So then, of course, comparison from moment to moment to good times, bad times, neutral times, confusion, inspiration, aspiration, ecstasy, loneliness, pour in with no effort whatsoever. And therefore it's impossible to not be interested in oneself, interested in the quality of one's experiencing, and therefore want it to be, I don't know, the best it can be. But even wanting experiencing to be the best it can be, that doesn't motivate us from moment to moment. I mean, how could you possibly live running around, from moment to moment, insisting upon or demanding or trying to cultivate your experience being the best it could possibly be? Where would you go? I mean, would you run out of the McDonald's and go to the Burger King and have it your way, or run from there and go to Chick-fil-A because they have waffle fries, or run from there and, get the best cookie you possibly could get at the Doylestown County Cinema? I mean, it's crazy, right? This even this notion of being interested in optimizing our present experience is fleeting, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of, it's not possible. If it worked, I would say, yeah, let's keep doing it, but it doesn't really work.
Well, even the, you know, the pursuit of maximizing sensuality or sensorial experience is, we get bored with it. As a matter of fact, it might be safe to say that we're more sanguine when we're not pushed around by a motive or an interest or the hallucination of things will get better tomorrow. Yeah. It might turn out that we're, let's say, happiest, if we can use that curious measure, when we're not pushed around from the hallucination of becoming.
Yeah, you're doomed to be a failure. If you're sure it's your job to make sure that you optimize and keep yourself happy, and you are going to be doomed to failure.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can't do it. Even though we may be motivated from time to time for, you know, circumstances and events to improve, whether local or long-term, we become, in a sense, kind of bored with ourselves. Yeah. We can't really maintain an interest based on destination. Despite what, you know, Tony Robbins and Wayne Dyer and, you know, other motivational speakers would have you believe, we're just not as interested as they suggest we are in optimizing our present experience.
I would say interest based on future destination. But
okay,
on current experiencing seems, at least at times, to be pretty darn fruitful.
Okay, yes, from time to time, interest in your present experience can be fruitful. But I would suggest one is happiest when there's no... there's no sight of being inspired or pushed around by any destination at all. Mm. It's like, I mean, to be Buddhist about it, let's say emptiness is happiness. Mm. You know, because a being doesn't need to be characterized by qualities or accoutrements that set us in motion, right? Set us in psychological time.
Being doesn't need to be what?
It doesn't need to have any accoutrements or any characterizations. In other words, here's yourself absolutely without even the slightest hint of some kind of self-assessment that could encourage you to do something about anything.
And to be in that space, I would think you have to somehow disconnect from the stream of thought and the endless, do this, be that, optimize. Because it seems like it's always the thought stream that's just jerking me around.
Well, the thought stream by itself is absolutely inert. It's the attention, right, and the animation that, let's say, you provide the thought stream, which makes it appear as if it's worth giving any attention to.
It comes up big time, like really loud, really obnoxious, in my fucking face, at times.
Yes, that's well, you know, we spoke about Paul. Why not continue with his clever analogies? Any loyalty or association given to the thought stream as self is selfing. And then, of course, you are the product of accoutrements. And as the product of accoutrements, you might find yourself pleased, displeased, or neutral. And always, in a sense, besieged by hallucination. Because thought isn't real. It's not genuine. It's occurring, right? It's an energy presence, let's say, right? And our association or attention given to thought is also, let's say, real and occurring. But it's hypnotic. It's not so. The imaginary universe that thought creates, or the self-assessment that it suggests, it's just pure heresy. And that's what's so disturbing to us. Yeah. But we fail to see that the presence of thought, or the association with thought, and the association with identity is what's actually disturbing us. We don't see that. What we see is the content of thought is what we think is bothering us.
Yeah. Like, oh my God, what's going to happen tomorrow that I'm worried about? That's the problem.
Yes, you see, when thought spins, we think that what thought is spinning is what's disturbing to us. That's, let's say, misidentification with circumstances and events that aren't happening. Yeah. So the, let's say, the more curious observation then is that the presence of association, the presence of qualities, the presence of space-time, the presence of me being the consequence of, you know, the streaming of thought, that's what's actually disturbing to us. Hmm.
So it's almost like back to the thought's going to stream, it's going to come, but the ability to just not believe that that's me. Not associate who I am with that thought stream, or the need to do something or act on it or fix it or any of that stuff.
Yes, that's right. I mean, in this present moment, let's call it that, where you as, Satchidananda, right, truth, consciousness, bliss, are residing, right, what need be done about this? What conjuring, whether in thought, identity, or association, needs to occur or really has anything to say to you? Not a damn thing, actually.
Yeah.
And seeing that, or feeling it, that this doesn't really have anything to share with you, releases one from possible identification or association with thought and the lies that thought tells.
Well, in my case, it's almost like the lies that thought tells have screwed themselves, because they took themselves to such a limit. It's like forcing me to just not invest in them anymore.
That's what's referred to as unfolding. You as awareness, consciousness, bliss, Satchidananda, no longer find it fruitful, desirous, or attractive to invest in the anecdotal hallucination that's appearing as a result of, consequence of, or genesis of thought.
I think it's just amazing how transparent it is. How, like, I have so many, and I know this is pulling from thought, but I have plenty of examples from the past where my mind was telling me certain things, and it was just bullshit. You know, like your mind running amok. Insecurities, paranoia, the whole nine yards.
Yes, this is what I mean by accoutrements.
Yeah. It used to take me over a lot easier than it does now.
Like, sure.
It was almost like a mental storm And it was like being in a blackout, and I would pop out of it. I'd go, holy shit, what was that? And for a long time, it was actually the work that helped me pop out of it.
Yes.
If I could grab something, kind of question it, diffuse it, and then land back in just my normal consciousness.
Well, sure. I mean, you can, I mean, that's a very valuable way to use the work, which is to respond constructively to, let's say, a mental shitstorm, you know, an identity shitstorm, and get back to, let's call it neutral.
Yeah,
and neutral's cool, especially better than being in the midst, you know, of a hornet's nest.
Yeah.
But neutral, of course, you know, when the time comes, is no longer sufficient for us.
There was something, there is something valuable about just sitting back and fully taking in the shitstorm, which I was not doing when I was insisting on writing it down and getting back to neutral.
You're right.
It was almost like I was stopping it from having its full life.
Sure.
Now I'm more apt to just let it have its full life and just almost like step back and just be fascinated with how fucking crazy it is.
Well, yes. I mean, you know, again, using the metaphor of unfolding could be spoken of as, let's just say, dispassion.
Yeah.
Right? A more relaxed dispassion. And therefore, the things that, let's say, would hijack our awareness or present insufficiency of a million kinds just kind of runs out of power.
That's the sense I got, was just it just kind of doesn't have the oomph it used to have. And who knows? I mean, it could show up with a vengeance tomorrow. It's possible. But
yeah, well, I mean, that fun part of, you know, Katie's teachings, which is, you know, bring it.
Yeah.
Right?
Maddie and I look forward to.
Yeah, which is lovely. You know, instead of cringing from, you know, disappointing mind streams of the past repeating themselves, we're onto it. And we're not pushed around by it. So we don't mind, you know, being a sitting duck. It's like, go ahead, bring it.
Yeah. I think we talked about this before, like feeling, I'm living in terror of who the hell I'm going to be next.
Mm-hmm.
It terrorized me for a while.
Hi, Gabe. Yes. We are, I mean, it's a kind of a sadness, you could say, that the whole species suffers from, which is being terrified of how they're going to show up to themselves next. You know, I mean, if we've had our fair share of depression or, you know, mental derangements or psychic shitstorms, we are terrified of ourselves.
Yeah.
We're you know, we're fucked up.
You wake up, it's like, did I trash my relationship yet? Did I trash my job yet? You know, like, it was only a matter of time if these shitstorms just were kept running the show.
That's right. I mean, how much more paralysis do I have to go through today? How much more paranoia? How much more depression? How much more sorrow?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's not pleasant, but it seems to be, let's say it just seems to be common, right? That we go through these very difficult passages in our psychiatry on the way to greater understanding.
That was where I really differed with Paul, because he was insinuating that, you know, the dream gets happier as you go along this path. And my experience is the shitstorms got a lot bigger in the last.
They did for him, you know, for decades, whether he was under the influence of alcohol, cocaine, sex, in an institution, in jail.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, his life was decades of worse and getting worser. And, you know, even once he began his recovery, he wasn't coming up roses.
Yeah.
I mean, he went to exotic places, you know, to meet exotic people and be inoculated by Asian, right? Asian thinking, Asian and Indian thinking. But it wasn't until he dropped his pants, you know, call it proverbially, in the middle of the street, that it started getting better, right? In other words, once he got sober and started considering the depth and curious nature of, call them non-dual teaching, right, whatever, you know, at least he had an orientation, right? But it's not like his life was getting, you know, incrementally better during those years of being sober and seeking and speaking extemporaneously within the 12-step community. You know, his life, if he has one, you know, got better, let's say measurably, after he woke up. I'm not sure if that's what he's, you know, selling to his student body or not. But I guess he has to, right?
It didn't sound like he was selling it, but he was referencing it.
Yeah.
But he, you know, it's gotten a lot of perks, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a very curious piece of business, right? The emancipation of you happens to be right here, right now, hello, goodbye, done. And what confuses us, you know, or contributes to our sorrow and our seeking is that we think that this is something else. We are subscribed to accoutrements. And as long as we're subscribed to accoutrements, they be they pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, you know, we're operating on, let's just say, delusional terms. And you can't cure delusion within the field of delusion. That's why, you know, the multi-billion dollar New Age and Neo-Advaita industries don't work, except enrich the pundits and the celebrities.
But he was saying use the dream to wake yourself up from the dream, which sounds a lot like the opposite of what you just mentioned.
Well, you know, we do that. I mean, what else can we do? I mean, we're not about to go into a cave and try to isolate ourselves from the marketplace in hopes of realizing, right? So we suffer and, let's say, realize within the marketplace, within the human marketplace. And that means socially and career-wise and sensually and religiously and financially and politically and in, you know, in every other arena that touches our lives. That's the stuff, the warp and woof of our congestion, ingestion, suggestion, and revelation. So, yeah, I mean, do the Course in Miracles. Become a celebrity presenter, you know, be certified in the work and large and have large numbers of people, you know, benefit from your celebrity and spiritual accomplishments. Get sued by Byron Katie. It doesn't get any better than that. You know, put on a dhoti and go sit on a rock somewhere near Sagadatta's apartment in Bombay. And see if anyone comes to talk to you. You know, go to Tiruvannamalai and listen to all of the, you know, the gurus, Western and otherwise, that float around there, you know, espousing, you know, Ramana Maharshi teachings. Like Carl Renz and, you know, God knows who. I mean, you could sign up and go to Andrew Cohen's cult and have him berate you and beat you and, you know, sodomize you and say you're making a lot of progress.
I think I'd rather just pick up Peter Brown again in California and you guys.
Yeah, that's right. You know.
Good food.
Yeah. Right, I mean, you know, do Vipassana retreats. Yikes. You know, do a lot of them. I mean, become a Buddhist, you know, pundit. Have an interview with Joseph Goldstein. See where that gets you. It's all good, as they say, right? You know, ultimately, not that there is one, it, not that there is anything, comes back, not that it ever left, here. Yeah. Our invitation, you could say, is the nature of being is remarkably prescient, present, and patient. We are the nature of being. This is the nature of being. When it's without accoutrement, meaning that we don't identify, right? There's no identification or reification. There's no accoutrements. There's nothing telling us what we are, what we aren't, what we've got, what we don't, what we need to do. Then we, let's say, have the curious gift of resting in being with little fanfare.
Yeah.
That may be too little for some people. I don't know.
It's like the model that the model we have from some of the people you've mentioned is just the opposite of that.
Yes.
Shitloads of fanfare or it's not the real deal.
Yes, that's right. I mean, if you're in the marketplace and you're trying to take cash from a dumb fuck seeker, you know, you want to give them a good reason to give you their cash, which means you want to create the appearance of some kind of spiritual accomplishment or histrionics so that they will want to be just like you and write a check, which is unfortunately, you know, perhaps all too frequent in the, you know, spiritual marketplace. But also it's unavoidable because, you know, we're we, right? Humans be humans. And as long as we're still identified with the accoutrements of personhood, then, you know, we're going to rally around, celebrity accomplished so-called spiritual beings. We're going to jump up and down and spend, you know, hours at an Amici event till the wee hours of the morning, you know, trying to sneak in for a second hug. Or we'll sing Hare Krishna louder than the jerk next to us and make it appear to everyone that we're for sure more spiritual. You know? Or, you know, Krishna Das will say something stupid about Neem Karoli Baba and everyone will go, ah. You know? Because Krishna Das is, you know, he's lovable and he's an idiot.
It's kind of funny because I've been at the game long enough and kind of having some just like measurement points like, okay, now this really seems like that's, you know, that really seems true. That feels right to me. And you go along and then you find the next thing that really seems true, feels right, and it contradicts the first. And it goes on like that for a while and you start to realize there's no fucking absolute truth of anything.
Yeah, well, that's both a scary and, a gleeful moment. Yeah. You see, the myth of becoming, right, relies on the misunderstanding that this is something, namely, I am something, and that there's a place for us, somewhere a place for us. I mean, you know, we're all suffering from that. There's a place for me. I will be, you know, I'm existent, I'm disparate, I'm special, I'm deserving. You know, it's like, what's that guy in Saturday Night Live that Al Franken played? Peter Smalley? Gosh darn it, I'm worth it, you know? It was like a little 12-step spoof that Al Franken was so good at. That's, you know, that's us. I'm good enough, I'm fast enough, I'm smart enough. And gee, I like people. That's great. Great to hear. We're terrified unconsciously, I would argue. Terrified unconsciously of being absolutely nothing at all. And yet, here we are, absolutely nothing at all. All of these qualities, biologic and otherwise, are appearing of their own nature, of their own accord. of their own, you know, dimensionality according to their own, let's say, laws of being. And we're just the effluent of that. You know, we're the symptom of something that's absolutely uncharted and unchartable. And as soon as identity occurs with the radiant miracle, then we suffer from the appearance of selfhood. And so time and destination and irritability and insufficiency. But we think we're insufficient as the person, and therefore go on a path of remedying superficial insufficiency, right? The reason we're actually insufficient or feel ourselves there is because the person's not real. Mm-hmm. So we try to remedy a misunderstanding of the core nature of our insufficiency. And that's why we fail for so long. Right? Because you can't fix the person, because there is no person. You can't fill the person with enough stuff for the person to say, oh, at last, I've arrived, I'm good to go. I mean, the Koch brothers, just, it doesn't end, right? The greed and the control, the manipulation does not end, no matter how much wealth one has accumulated.
Well, the final hurrah of personhood is death, and we all know it. That personhood is so, it's so attached to the body, and we all know at one time or another, sooner or later, the game's over.
Yeah, maybe. But maybe I would say we're less so afraid of death, because death is a total fantasy. I mean, even though we may have seen our fair share of cadavers, even within our family or on TV, you know, violently disposed of or otherwise, we still have no idea. I would say we're not really afraid of death because we don't have any genuine relationship with death. What we're afraid of is the presence of our own insufficiency. And, you know, people may be troubled by aging but even those symptoms, I mean, what's really troubling us? The cessation of being, right? The cessation of being, which we might refer to as death, is that really troubling us? And that panic, if it does arise, is kind of it's an arbitrary panic. It's not real. It's based on ideas. Like everything is, you know, you could say based on or the presence of an idea, of a randomized representation swirling about within what we refer to as the primate meme. What's going to happen to me? And all of the self-medication that we might participate in are superficial amelioratives for the principal panic, which is what's going to happen to me. You know, maybe I can drink it away, inject it away, sniff it away, love it away, dance with shamans in the wee hours of the morning under the influence of ayahuasca, it away. The real, you know, startling observation is like, you don't have to do anything about this.
Kind of relaxing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is relaxing. Quite lovely. You don't have to do anything with or about your present experience. Garuda's got your back. you know, but it's funny that that observation or say sensation may be golden, right, for a seeker. It may make no sense to someone that's never lifted a finger to find out what the hell is going on here, what the hell this is, you know, hasn't committed themselves to, you know, a discovery process.
It seems like the discovery process and that commitment to it is driven by let me the hell out of here. And some people just, they're not interested in exploring, they just take it for what it is. They don't necessarily feel the need to escape.
No, yeah, I mean, human beings, were there any, are, you know, strange. And the, you know, the quality or amplitude of presentation amongst, you know, humans is broad. I mean, some of us are, you know, cannibals. some of us go on pilgrimages to holy places where, you know, dead guru remains exist. Some go to the Ramakrishna Center in LA, you know, when they take out the relics so they could have Ramakrishna's tooth put on their forehead, you know, and then go out for really good sushi. Some of us rule the world. Relatively few, but some, you know, others of us are systematically violated by failing political systems and failing sustainability systems, or, you know, violence and criminality going on all over the world that are stealing daughters from fathers, right? Or children from mothers. Yeah. Who knows? Maybe the Klingons and the whatever Spock's tribe was, you know, they're not going to visit here until humanity puts down its arms. Maybe in the you know, the Federation of Planets, they will not set down until, you know, the local species stops killing itself. Otherwise, it's like those fuckers are just too primitive. You know, we're not gonna give them our technological secrets until they finally see that it's just not such a good idea to kill each other. I don't know. God, and we hope secretly that it's not going to get too boring when we're finally done with our seeking.
Sometimes show up.
Yeah. This does. This is opulent.
Yeah.
And infinite, generous beyond imagination. And it's possible, there's an alchemy, let's say, that's possible, which is the irrefutable nature of your present experience, is a string that you can pull on and become unhooked from all delusion. I mean, to me, that's exciting. You know, ever since I could remember, the hint of that was always exciting to me. And I don't know if I could say that about, you know, most people. What is it that alights someone into being thrilled with the idea of a journey that reveals to them something about the miraculous nature of being?
It's the taste of the end game.
I think so.
We're all,
I think it is.
A certain taste of the end game. It's like, okay, I'm
yep.
here.
Yep.
How do I get there again?
I think there's no doubt about it. You have to be inoculated with a taste of the end game to say, what's that I smell? And it turns out to be you. And so you commit yourself, you know, perhaps even involuntarily, to going the distance to find out what this has to reveal to you. That's cool.
It's pretty funny, though, because going the distance doesn't... It no longer means just jumping on whatever bandwagon for all it's worth. I don't think that's going to give me anything.
Yes.
Still do.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. You know, if someone opens up, you know, a gluten-free donut shop, I'll be there at 5 a.m.
This, you know, sitting here talking to you, still sounds better than watching a video. You know, it just sounds better.
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, you're of the nature of a miraculous palette of feeling. And to the extent that you have choices to make, as your feeling tone matures or unfolds or becomes more subtle, then you gravitate to those things, events, people, right, occasions that nourish you in a subtle way, because you're feeding that way. That's how we, I mean, that's how we reply, right? I mean, how does a paramecium reply to its environment? Or an amoeba reply to its environment? And you could say in a very rudimentary way, right? It snuggles with elements in its environment where it's going to find nourishment. Simpatico of being. And we do the same. We just have a very, you know, curiously broad palate, right? Amoebas have I don't want to put them down, you know. I mean, some of my best friends are amoebas. But biologically speaking, you could say, you know, an amoeba has a relatively primitive or simple palate, where the human being palate is like, wow. You know, we could do 50 Shades of Grey. Drive fast cars. Put on a squirrel suit and jump off a high cliff. You know, with a camera on our helmet and a parachute that we hope opens. We could go to a Adyashanti retreat or a, you know, 30-day or a 3-month Vipassana retreat. We could cavort with Tibetans. We could submerge ourselves in an iron tank somewhere off the coast of Australia and hope to be visited upon by a great white shark.
Or we could just give it up and live an extremely, quote, normal life. Stop all this shit. It's no place to get.
Yeah, I mean, come on, the lion's share of so-called persons, whether dwelling in the West or the East or developed or undeveloped nations, you know, are not, by and large, looking for exorbitant thrills.
Yeah.
You know, cigarette, game of cards, a little piece of chicken before I go to bed. You know, I'll go to work tomorrow.
Well, it's almost like you're kind of beaten down. When you're younger, the big thrills are, like, right there. Supposedly, you're going for them. And then you get a little older, and it's like, eh. It's easier for a video, and it just perspective changes.
You know, everyone lives in a very curious bardo. Not even of their own making. We can't even account for why spooks seek employment with the NSA. or someone becomes, you know, a deviant visual artist. I mean, we're too strange, we're too miraculous. Our palate is too large. And, you know, and curiously, or in a lovely way, you know, the species, were there one, is, you could see, still unfolding, right? Hopefully the refinements and the consciousness of the species continue to mature so that, you know, maybe we would stop killing each other and everyone gets a piece of chalk and their own piece of pavement to, you know, draw beautiful three-dimensional images on the sidewalk. Instead of spending all the money that we do on sophisticated weaponry, we would spend our money on, you know, every weekend we'll have a pageant and a food fair. And no one has to work anymore.
But then the guys that just love guns and all the big military toys, they wouldn't have as much fun.
I know, then they would all be disenfranchised. It would be terrible for them.
Like, that's great fun for them.
There's no question about it. I mean, the design teams that, you know, build rail guns, they can't, it's not possible to have more fun than that.
They love that shit. You know, they love that shit.
Mhm. Yeah. Right. I mean, running out of oil is really thrilling.
Mhm.
You know, watching the last polar bear sink into the sea. We'll probably put it on TV. Oh, there goes the last polar bear. Right? Drowned in our sorrow. The temperature's rising, they say. And, you know, the pundits that evaluate these kinds of things are like, it's done. It's done. The pH in the oceans will change inexorably, you know, a few points this way or a few points that way. The Gulf Stream will change. You know, climate instability, rising of the oceans, the CO2 levels. This species is done.
How can it be done? I don't quite believe that it's that cut and dried because it's not real. It's mind-created stuff, and I just don't believe it. And I'm not an optimist. That's not
you might be right. I mean, the entire biosphere might not be, you know, independently existing of imagination.
Yeah.
And so we, whatever we are or aren't, as a product of something that's fantastic, could imagine itself, you know, into, you know, a biospheric golden age, more or less in an instant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how I wouldn't know. I'm just a kind of a blue-collar idiot, you know, I'm just a dumb fuck poser that, you know, reads a few things here and there and says, oh, well, watch out. Yeah, this can do anything it wants. It has so far. Nothing's going to stop it now.
Yeah.
And even if you want to take a more materialistic view, and, you know, it turns out that the human species in its present form is, you know, is done for, whatever this is will, you know, take care of itself, mutate into something else.
Mm-hmm.
No problems there. I don't know if... Consciousness will weep with our passing. This curious first-hand nature you could say as it resolves to feel itself free from the the mirage of quality, free from the mirage of accoutrement, free from the mirage of any kind of accusation. Is very lovely.
Restful at times.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people use the word, juicy.
Yeah.
Radiant being is juicy.
Dense.
The discovery of nonstop subtlety is, it's kind of thrilling. I guess it doesn't do anything other than fulfill itself. And that's a weird thing to say, amidst news reports that might suggest otherwise. Didn't Stevie Wonder say that? Fulfillingness first, finale? That was the name of one of his recordings. If someone is suffering from trouble and consternation and confusion and, the bitter weirdness that gets created in your mind when you're schooled by Hindus or Buddhists or Catholics or whomever. It's nice to, lend a helping hand, right? To a mind that's overwhelmed by superstition. And create opportunities for resolution, quiet seeing, maybe some amount of revelation, dignity. I mean, so much of the, media, whether it's the popular media or the spiritual media, is so undignifying. There's so much come on. So it's, kind of, what would you say? It's nice to give something back, right? To create an atmosphere, an invitation for interested parties to feel themselves, and look at the texture of reality and see what might be there for to quench their thirst. Suzanne, what's happening? Are you lurking nearby? I see her phone number, but I don't hear her.
I'm defrosting my car. Can you hear me?
Yes. You're unintelligible as usual. But that's what we like about you.
Am I audible?
I hear you.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I'm defrosting my car.
You're defrosting your car?
Yeah. Well, you know, heading home from work, I had to get the ice off my car.
Well, thanks for sharing.
I wasn't sure if I had my phone on mute or not mute. I assumed it was on mute.
Oh.
Hopefully it was. Otherwise, it would have been very loud.
No, if it had been, I would have canceled your mic.
You would have just disconnected me.
I think you raise a good point. I think if we renamed this Car Talk instead of Night Sky Sangha, we'd have a lot more people joining in.
Yeah.
Did those guys go off the air, the Car Talk guys from Boston or wherever they were from, New Hampshire?
Well, the one died, right? But I think the other one was going to keep on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. It's like those guys in Prairie Home Companion, you know. Without them, I wouldn't know what to do with my life. Our dear friend Gabriel from Australia is on the call with us.
But
he's a shy person.
That's cool.
I think
good day.
We can hear you now, Gabe, if you want to say something.
It's a bit different to where you guys are weather-wise, I think. It's nearly 40 degrees here.
It's your summertime, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had northeastern winter weather today.
Hmm.
Let's dance.
It's my phone ringing.
What have I missed so far?
No one can recall.
I'm sure. I sent you that thing about...
UG.
I was thinking it was the other Krishnamurti, but it was the other Krishnamurti. You were talking about Krishnamurti on Sunday.
Yes,
but
right.
Then I realized, oh no, it's the wrong Krishnamurti.
Yeah, you sent me some stuff of UG Krishnamurti.
UG, yeah.
But that's okay. He was a fun time as well.
Is he the one that towards the end of his life, he started... He went back on everything he'd said before then and started saying, actually, I had it all wrong all along. We are separate people and this kind of thing.
I don't recall that, you know, coming
Someone
out.
Someone told me this. Maybe that's not the case, but I heard that he was sort of considered an anomaly in Advaita world because towards the end of his life, he went senile and started saying, actually, I was wrong all that time. We are separate entities inhabiting a world or something. I think I'm pretty sure that was him.
He lived to a ripe old age, and it's possible that he was dehydrating. And he was always prone to, you know, being kind of, you know, crazed and fun and pushy.
Yeah,
so,
true. I've seen that.
It wouldn't be past him to, you know, as a lark or whether through senility to, you know, play the 180-degree game for fun.
Yeah, maybe. And also it's hearsay that he even did that for me. I I haven't heard him directly say that.
Yeah,
someone was telling me about it.
Yeah, I didn't come upon it, you know,
it wasn't. Sorry, it was someone else. It was Ramesh I was thinking of. Ramesh Palsika.
Maybe.
If it was even him. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, right.
There you go. There's some rumor for you, some non-dual rumors.
Yeah, non-dual rumors, yeah. Those are real valuable. Yeah, Ramesh, he hit upon a few, speed bumps there, you know, toward part of the end of his career. There was, some sexual events that had gone on, and there were some disquietude around financial, pushiness at some retreats, in South India and, stuff like that. It happens. Yeah. Jean Klein, went, I don't know if you want to call it senility, but as he began to dehydrate, let's say, in a euphemistic manner, toward the end of his life, he needed a lot of medical care and various kinds of attention. And he suffered, from PTSD as a young man, more or less escaping from, World War II Germany. And so he had, some really interesting elements, right, in psyche, and from time to time they would come out, Yeah. That notion of yogic control, right, over one's consciousness, over one's experience, over one's expression. It was never really a big emphasis of the, let's call it the Kashmiri Shaivism or, Dzogchen or Advaita crowd. So, if you live a ripe old age and start declining, who knows if some of your youthful madness doesn't start presenting itself? Why not? Why shouldn't it? awake, if there is such a thing, is not a panacea for a person. So who cares how someone behaves or doesn't behave? If people behave in a way that suits your sentiment and makes you feel warm and fuzzy, you align with that. If people, that even charismatic people, behave in a way that starts to make you feel uncomfortable and no longer suitable to your adventure, get out. If you can.
Pretty simple.
Yeah.
It's kind of the aesthetic that appeals to you more than anything, rather
absolutely.
Than
absolutely. Yeah, I mean,
trying to find some an ideal person who will tell you the way things are.
Yeah.
You put them on a pedestal and then if they disappoint you in any way, it's like...
Yes. Well,
aesthetic you want.
The Kripalu Yoga Center in Lenox, Massachusetts, everyone was living under the somewhat kind of orthodox Hindu rubric of Amrit Desai. And, once it became kind of public that Amrit Desai had engaged in, various sexual affairs, with students of his, right, as a married man with grown children, the place became unglued. And it got out of hand to the point where the people in power could no longer repress it or suppress it, or no longer successfully ostracize those that wanted that truth to come out, which they did for a long period of time, And so once the floodgates broke, they started tearing chairs apart, lighting fires in the meditation hall, So, yes, the aesthetic, right? The ascetic and the aesthetic changed. And they had to dismiss Amrit Desai from having, call it spiritual or financial influence over the institution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty common.
Yeah, what the hell?
Maybe not as dramatically as that. Like, that's kind of pretty dramatic, literally setting fire to things. But
yeah, they did. Yeah, some people were setting fire to things. Well, it was, you know, it was all bottled up, you know. There was financial imbalances, behavioral imbalances, yogic imbalances. All of these things were artificially, you know, kept in place. And you could say, you know, the human spirit is too strong to be sublimated successfully forever. And so it got uncorked, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds unhealthy anyway. Anything where it... I don't see the difference between that and what they call ego.
Well, cult...
As in, you know, as like... Kind of... just, as you say, artificially enforcing...
Yes.
Certain ways of being. And then, as you say, it becomes unbalanced. And then naturally it's yo-yos back. And
consciousness is happy to behave in a fascistic manner.
Yeah,
I mean, that's right. Since the, you know, the principal lens through which we see being is absolutely artificial and contrived, and then all kinds of distortion will naturally occur, right, within our behavioral systems, spiritual and otherwise, because the predominant lens is. It's Baroque.
Warped. Yeah, yeah, Baroque and warped. Yeah.
That's right. And so that's cool then. You know, all forms of suppression, repression, and, you know, revolution from that, the amount of, you know, energy that is invested in controlling people's behavior, people's consciousness, people's capacity to discover their own nature, artificial systems that... insist that we pay homage or, you know, celebrate the master. Look the other way when, you know, he or she commits sex crimes or financial crimes, right? Mm. I mean, it's all of humanity dwells within a cult of confusion. So all of these things are, you know. Part of the trip.
Yeah.
Ta-da. What can be unfortunate is that, you know, people caught in the crossfire of these events, you know, may not move on. Right, take it in stride, mature through it, and keep up with their most sincere adventure. It's easy to get derailed and suffer from a disappointment.
What do you think, Jeff, about the idea you hear commonly in spiritual circles about moving out of the so-called conceptual and more into, like Peter Brown would phrase it as a more textural experience or a more texturally focused experience?
Yeah.
Versus like the conceptual ideas of
the metaphor. The metaphor is very useful and is, you know, emphasized in many different kinds of teaching. I mean, you know, even in the, the Judaic teaching, right, and the Gnostic, whether it's Christian Gnostic or, you know, Abrahamic Gnostic, you're going to, as well as Dzogchen, Kashmiri Shaivism, and, you know, Peter's kind of contemporary Yoga of Radiant Presence, right? You could say it's all about the Jyoti. It's all about the base, not the treble. It's all about the Jyoti, you know, from a Hindu point of view, it's all about the light. It's all about the texture of the nature of being, not the symptomatic effulgence that's appearing in the being. That's, you could say, a key element of maturing of attention. Right? Like thought doesn't do anything unless you give it attention, right? Thought is inert unless there's attention. And the attention that animates the thought, you could say also is, appears familiar as belief, right? As association and identification. It's universe creation, right? So when consciousness or attention, awareness, attends to thought as a structural meme for universe creation, then we live abstractly. We're living anecdotally. We're living secondhand. So the game plan then for all of these yogas is see in what ways you can discover yourself as awareness itself, not what awareness is attending to. And even Nirsagadatta's teachings, which come from, you know, Siddharameshwar, and the, you know, and Das Boot, and or Das Bodh, and the path of the bird, is also emphasizes the irrefutable presence of your conscious awareness, rather than turning to symptom, abstraction. Turns to itself. I mean, think of Jimi Hendrix with a Stratocaster leaning into a stack of Marshalls, right? creating the most glorious feedback that, you know, one would hear. So even that illustrates the yoga of radiant presence. In other words, you end up in a miraculous feedback loop of disembodied awareness simply attending to itself, and that becomes a, you could say, a miraculous and unspeakable intimacy with the fractal nature of exploding stimulus from moment to moment. But you're no longer on the receiving end of this expressive effulgence by attenuating to circumstances and events. You actually see, oh my gosh, I am, you could say, the source of this effervescence, right? And that's true now. I mean, without even having to have a miraculous experience. You are the source of the effervescence. You are effervescing, you know, miraculously, as presence in presence. And that's a very different, let's say, quality of appreciating your present experience than imagining yourself to be the consequence of symptoms, of ideas.
Right? It seems like, this well put, it seems like either way, the feedback loop is a really good analogy. Like, you can imagine, it's like, you could either see where it's coming from in a sense where the fractal effervescence, as you put it, is coming from.
Yeah.
Or you can spin off into the feedback loop of all the abstractions, and that's itself right. Another feedback loop that is endless.
Right. So let's say you're trying to drink from a fountain, right? And the fountain that you're trying to drink from, instead of being a nice, cool stream that you can put your parched lips to, happens to be a fire hose. So the fire hose is blowing your face off from moment to moment. That's what you're up against,
yeah.
Right? This, as you could say, as you know, simple and subtle as this may be in a quiet conversation, it's also blowing you apart. It's blowing your face off. That's how rich it is. That's how radiant. I mean, it's like a giant puppy that just wants to lick you to death. and that's why it's so easy for us to be distracted by symptoms, by concepts.
Yeah.
Because it really is nonstop. I mean, the glory of you is nonstop.
Yeah, and they have that richness to them as well, don't they?
Yes, absolutely.
The thoughts, the abstractions, the narrative has a richness to
yes.
it as well, so it's quite hypnotizing yes. as well.
Yeah. Yes, it's this. That's right. This is unabashedly and unapologetically self-hypnotizing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that... you can appreciate your firsthand experience, that we can articulate that observation. Well, that suggests that there's sufficient maturity or sensitivity in you to even come face to face with it. And that's profound.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's being kind of, I feel like, chewed up and spat out by enough sort of like just buying into narratives and then it hurting enough, and then also the curiosity of what's going on has always been there. So
absolutely. I mean, it's not
everyone has it.
It's not easy to recognize without running away or coming up with 1,000 explanations or defenses that this self obscures. And to be able to see that this self obscures means that you have, let's say, a place in a meta position, which is no position at all, come to the observation of your own self-obscuring nature. And that you can have a chuckle about the revelation of your own self-obscuring nature.
Yeah, you're not in it then.
Suggests that you're absolutely free from it.
Yeah.
Now that, you could say, is the, you know, call it the bij or the seed of self-realization.
Mm.
Yeah. To have even, you know, a moment's humorous glimpse of how self-obscuring your present experience is, of how well this hides from itself in your experience, is revelatory. Now you could say from that moment forward, and who's to say? I mean, this moment may have occurred to you when you were 3 years old and you just don't have a strong recollection of it, right? But somewhere along the lines, you are inoculated with a profound suspicion. And that profound suspicion was the presence of yourself emancipated from, call it, self-delusion. And so you and everyone else, you know, that are friends to this kind of thing, are on a kind of a sacred secular journey for that to come to a deeper fruition. and really all of the shit that we do and have suffered and gone through, it all comes down to this one simple, remarkable observation, is that this self obscures. But you're outside it. And that one simple revelation has the, call it the potency for unfolding to move to absolute fruition. No big deal. You see, because nothing is true. There is no ultimacy. There's no destination. There's no experience that you need have or hold out for, right? Right now, you are the unobscured primacy. Right now, just this, the absolute unobscured primacy. And now you're onto yourself, having the miraculous capacity to self-obscure. And once that stops fooling you, then everyone else can just fuck off. You know what I mean? You don't have to hold out for Nirsagadatta to call you from the dead and say, oh, Gabe, you know, you nailed it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Because no one and nothing is higher than you. You are below nothing. And that's this. No big deal. You don't have to walk around with some kind of ecstatic experience to share so that you can get on Conscious TV and tell Renata McNay that you became enlightened through such and such an event. You know what I mean? Because all of that is horseshit. It's all bullshit.
Yeah, it's fucking boring, yeah.
And it's so boring. It's just
such boring
bullshit.
And just self-indulgent.
Yes, it
self-indulgent,
is.
Self-indulgent, yeah.
Yep. It's all self-indulgent.
I can't think of the word self-aggrandizement. However it's dressed up and however it's downplayed oh so subtly that it's not really anything, but you know,
it's
but it is
nothing.
Something.
I mean, because you can see that just as you are capable of a miraculous self-obscuration just for fun, so is Renata McNay and Ian McNay and everyone that they've interviewed. Like Tim Freck, you know? Like, who gives a fuck about Tim Freck?
Freak.
Nothing that Freak makes more sense. Tim Freak. It's like nothing anybody says about anything has anything of value. Because you are the supremacy of being. The unobscurable supremacy of being. You don't have to run around saying, oh,
I
had an enlightenment experience.
No. I guess, on the other hand, the weird paradox of it, though, is it helps having these kind of conversations and even hearing people talk about something extra normal or something like that, some experience they had or blah, blah, blah. In a sense, it can help seed a curiosity at... You know,
yes. Yeah.
More likely, it would make it. I know it happened to me. I felt like, for a time, it's like it just amped everything up. The whole mechanism that was already there of trying to find some kind of experience which is better, more peaceful, more whatever. Like some just improved. That actually went into overdrive. Even though it's absurd, because a lot of them are saying. In the sort of non-dual circle, the kind of thing they're saying, well, stop seeking, there's not really any thing to get, but then...
Yes. Well, you can find...
There's a mind-numbing paradox there, I don't know.
You can find anything and everything that you might wish to find when it comes to, you know, the spiritual jungle. I mean, Ramana Maharshi woke up at, you know, 14 years old, lying on the floor. It's like, ooh, ooh, me too. Ooh, ooh, me. Ooh, ooh, me. right? Or well, Jay, you know,
like wanting that. Yeah.
Yeah, or you know, Jay Krishnamurti had angels come visiting some house in Ojai, and you know, went into, you know, bizarre ecstasies, and everyone felt the presence of something or other, and it's like, ooh, ooh, me too. Let's light some candles. Me too. Please, me, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what did Nirsagadatta do? His guru said, "You're it. Shut the fuck up and, you know, sit there." He was like, "Okay, I can do that." And so he did that. You know, he sat there and he said, "Oh, wow. I happen to be the supremacy of being, kind of like chilling on myself." And in his own words, it didn't take him too long, right, to be established in that revelation.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think however much it's downplayed, though, however much it's... I don't know. I just found that, yeah, that same avariciousness for enjoyable experiences, it's just, it's insatiable and...
Yes.
Quite enjoying just not really caring about it now. Just
right.
Like you and Peter, this kind of like pretty much the only people in that in general that I have any time for now that I even want to go there and enter that realm, as you put it.
Yes.
Because I've heard you talk about realms in that respect. I don't really want to.
No, it's nice just, to be.
It triggers
done.
That in me where it's like I want to. Yeah. It's, yeah. Exactly.
It's nice to be done with. Realms, you know, as a vehicle
yeah.
for the insatiability of your insistence on becoming enlightened.
Yeah. I think you put it, you called it like, I think you called it bourgeois or something, like ridiculously bourgeois an idea. I think that's really spot on.
Well, you know, let's just say one's sanguine nature is free from the pushiness of obscuration and accoutrement. And we don't want to get involved in all of that, you know, horrific seeking and all that pedagoguery that accompanies, you know, non-dual indulgence. We just yeah. like, hey, oh, this is it. Oh, yeah, this is it. This is totally it. Right. Oh, that's right. I'm
yeah.
the supremacy. I am the supremacy of being. That fucking rocks. And I'm just going to, you know, chill out and see what's on its mind.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I like that. What's on its mind is a good way to put it.
Yeah. And the, you know, the discovery of the unending nature of subtlety, right? Disappearing and appearing, effervescing and disappearing. That's where your attention goes, right into the heart of yourself, right? As the miracle of effervescent evaporation. That's what you are. You're the present miracle of effervescent evaporation. And you're okay with it. And then we become, you could say, much less demanding in our corporeal lives about what needs
yeah.
to happen. Because you happen to have discovered that you are the miracle of effervescing evaporation. And truly, everyone can go fuck off. But instead of isolating yourself, right, because you're nourished by the radiant miracle of yourself, you might turn out to become just more affable.
Yeah, that's it. It's not even so much an angry fuck off necessarily. It might be at first, but it's just like, I just don't care. Like, I don't need someone else's version of
there you go.
What is going on, how this is.
You're done with everybody's
version. I don't need to pay someone
version.
Money either to sit and
no.
hear them speak.
Yeah, I mean,
like
that's
that,
the
you know?
Gift. That's the gift of your own autonomy. You're done with everybody's version.
Yeah.
Rock and roll. Any other comments before we close our little coven this evening?
I'm here, Jeff.
Well, thanks for hanging. It's a pleasure to see everyone.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
You bet.
Take care, guys.
Yeah, good.
Okay.
Bye.
We'll talk again.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, sounds great. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.